The Sunday Show with EPIC, the Irish Emigration Museum, an interactive journey that shows how a small island made a big impact on the world. EPICCHQ.com.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome to the Sunday Show this evening, coming to you from EPIC, the Irish Emigration Museum here in Dublin. And I'm delighted to be joined by David Cleary, who is singly responsible for all the tickets that are sold here. David, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Ed. That's a lot of praise indeed.
So you're in charge of, you're the sales and marketing?
I'd be director of sales and operations here in EPIC. So as I suppose a lot of responsibility in a certain sense, but what a product to be able to sell. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think that first of all, if you could just chat a little bit about the concept of it. And I know Neville Isdale, I remember when it opened in 2016,
yes.
I was living very near, and it was there was a great flurry of excitement. This building, of course, has had a turbulent past in terms of, I suppose, commercially, it was always difficult to know what to do with it. But I think you guys, you hit the spot with EPIC.
I think we have, and I think we're very lucky in terms of the building, as you say, for it to be a great home for EPIC and our museum. CHQ building, for the people that are listening that don't know about it, it's an old whiskey, wine and tobacco warehouse. It's over 200 years old. It's one of the last industrial warehouses in Dublin. And when it was opened back in 1817, or when it was finished, it was Dublin's first fireproof warehouse. Barrels of wine and whiskey that were stored here in the vaults of the building that were then, the taxes and the customs were paid in the nearby custom house. Huge amount of history. It was redone in the early 2000s by the Dublin Docklands Corporation and essentially became a failed shopping centre. I think Louis Copeland had one of his shops here, and he famously said there was more footfall on the moon. So after Neville...
I did buy a few shirts.
So there were some people coming through then. But when Neville took it over, I suppose he had a vision. His background is, he's an Irish emigrant. He left Ireland when he was 10, moved over to Zambia and Africa, and he worked his way up through Coca-Cola organization. And in the early 2000s, he became worldwide CEO and chairman of Coca-Cola. So Neville is a guy with fantastic business sense, a huge amount of knowledge, and but what he has in abundance is vision. He can see a couple of years and how he wants to do something. So he saw this opportunity to purchase the building to really turn it into a cultural centre. He's still not finished. Like, EPIC is only a part of the puzzle. We've great plans over the next couple of years to turn the space that we're sitting in here at the moment in EPIC to add a food market. So that's part of our plans that we're going to be announcing in the next couple of months. But a huge part of what we're trying to do here is, obviously, in Dublin's Docklands, is getting people down here. There's a huge amount of people living in the area. As you mentioned, you lived nearby. People wouldn't recognise this area from 10 years ago, particularly from 20 years ago. The offices that have gone up, the amount of people that are living and working down in Dublin Docklands is absolutely incredible. So it's really important to have cultural institutions such as EPIC, or the Jeannie Johnson Famine Ship, or Windmill Lane over across the river from us, and then bars and restaurants. So all of that kind of really adds to the buzz in the area. EPIC, when it opened back nearly 8 years ago now, back in 2016, it was opened as, I suppose, a museum to tell the story of Irish diaspora. And when they talked about the concept of it, they didn't exactly know how they wanted to tell that story. So there was obviously a lot of research done back before 2016 when it opened, and bringing on a company called Event Communications to do the design on the museum. When the museum opened, it was known as the world's first fully digital museum. And I suppose that sometimes scares a lot of people in terms of interacting with a museum and a storytelling. And going around the world and I'm talking to people and trying to get them to come to our museum, I say it's just a way of storytelling. It's a different medium. It's how we explain the story of Irish people. Audio and video stories and touch screens and swiping, it all just comes back to the stories of people. So yeah, when EPIC opened, it was very different back in 2016, and it's been a long road of 8 years interrupted by COVID, but we are just flourishing now. It's just a really exciting time.
On that point, that's very interesting, because when I remember coming in when it opened up and I saw Riverdance and all the thing about Grace Kelly, but you know, and it was dancing right in front of you. It flowed effortlessly over you. And I remember, because some, as you know yourself, some museums and places like this can be hard work sometimes, and there's a lot of information to take in. I remember leaving and feeling so proud to be Irish, yeah, and being a bit mesmerised by the whole thing. I think the company you mentioned there, David, they actually did Titanic as well with the new experience. They're incredible. So again, that was one of the things about the recent editions. Again, it just tells stories and flows effortlessly over you. So I think that's one of the things that really made it enjoyable.
Definitely. it's intuitive. It really is. It's quite a large museum. The footprint of the building here, essentially we've got three different levels. So if people are familiar with the CHQ building, you've got this main mall, which has cafes and bars and restaurants, as well as having the ticket desk for Epic. But there's a whole another level underneath, which is where the vaults are. So you've got Epic down there, you've got Urban Brewing, you have a gym, you have Dog Patch Labs, and then there's another mezzanine level on the first floor. So there's a huge footprint. Half the footprint of the building then is Epic. So down in the vaults, there's 20 different galleries that tell those stories. And very intuitive in terms of bringing people on a journey. And I suppose I'm a typical salesman, is that I will end up using cliches, but I'm very loath to do that because it'd be unfair to the experience, I think. But we do bring people on that journey. We put people in the line of sight of what it was like to leave Ireland. Going on that journey, everyone that comes to the museum gets a passport, and they stamp their passport as they're making their way through the museum. It's very deliberately thought out in terms of telling the story of what people are leaving behind, the landscapes of Ireland, where they would have travelled and how they would have travelled, particularly over 1500 years. It's a story that brings you through Ireland's history over that time period. And in that time, 10 million Irish people would have emigrated from the island. So we essentially want to represent them and to tell their stories, and to do it by making it interesting and not just lots and lots of reading, and or not all video content, not all just listening. It's really interactive in terms of just drawing out that story in different ways for people. Because of the 20 different galleries, we had three main designers in the museum. If you were designing gallery one, you had no say in gallery two or three in terms of how it was designed, because we very deliberately wanted it to be different for people. So every time we move into a new room and into a new gallery, there's a different subject, and how we tell the story is done in a different way. Very much with the visitor in mind. We don't want people just sitting down and watching and reading, because it's a different experience. We wanted to change it up for them. We want it to be different.
That explains, actually, yeah, because every gallery seems to be fresh. Another little museum or another little experience, which is very clever, I think.
And very deliberately done. Each of the galleries has a different story. The start of the museum, the first couple of galleries are all about the motivating factors, those reasons why Irish people would have either been forced to emigrate from the island of Ireland or wanted to emigrate. And we tell their stories about why they left. So it's very much a kind of a window into Ireland's history using a lens of emigration. And the second half of the museum is very much, it pivots, it changes into a celebration of Irish culture. Because what we explain in the museum, when those 10 million Irish people emigrated from the island, they didn't just emigrate and that was it. They brought things with them. They brought their family name, they brought their actual family. But they would have brought, like anyone emigrating around the world, they bring their culture and their heritage, their language, their sport, their recipes. And that's what we're going to explore in the second half of the museum, about telling the story of these people and where they went to, and very much bringing in the second, third, fourth generation Irish story as well. And a huge amount of those people that we celebrate and speak about, the 70 million plus people around the world that claim Irish heritage, it's a celebration of their story as well. So a lot of the people that come to our museum every year are of Irish ancestry. It's about 70% international visitors last year that came to the museum. A huge amount of them would have been American visitors who wanted to come over here and trace their ancestry, which we help them do through our genealogy service, but just feel a connection back to Ireland. Because I think we sometimes maybe take it for granted, living here and sitting in Dublin, of our Irish ancestry. But the people that are around the world that have that connection back to Ireland, we can't underestimate it, you know? Yep. And EPIC, for those people, that the listeners that don't know, EPIC stands for Every Person is Connected. It's just exploring those connections is what we try to do.
I probably should have asked you at the start, what did it stand for? So people, but I'm delighted. Well done, because I actually knew that as well. What was really interesting when you talked there, when we have a new flight, we've great flights now connecting America. At least, I think we're up to 20 now. There's new ones coming on. But we did the show from Cleveland last week, and a lot of people from Cleveland who came over here, came here, and I met them in Cleveland, and they had done the experience. Great. And the genealogy. And it was amazing to hear what they actually got out of it, something very different. And they would have camped overnight. They loved it.
That's great.
Which was amazing to hear when I was there.
Yeah, and it's a special place, because people really have their own story, their own family history. So as I said, a lot of Americans, people like those people from Cleveland, they come over to Ireland and they have this sense of connection with the island. They have their ancestry.
And huge Mayo and Cork immigration.
Absolutely.
From,
it's incredible.
From here, yeah, to that
absolutely
place.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
That chain migration that we go on to explore. Mm. And our genealogists do a fantastic job of looking at whole villages that would have come from Mayo and Cork and settled in various areas in the United States. But their sense of, they're inquisitive. They want to find out where their ancestors have come from. So our genealogists, we have a range of packages that we help helped them, that we helped them explore that. But some of the ones that there's these news packages, we call them our research packages. So ahead of time, we do all of the research with the genealogist, and we will find out a little bit of information from them, do a preliminary Zoom call, and then 3 months of research takes place. And then we bring them over to Ireland, we bring them into Epic, we sit them down and we present their family history to them. And kind of like a mini who do you think you are. And then we take them on a personalised tour of the museum, and we will give them a sense of where their family story is put into the overall Epic story. What was happening in the 1840s in Mayo, for example? What maybe drew their family out of Ireland? What some of the reasons they may have come and settled in Cleveland or wherever it is in the States? And they really feel that personal connection. They can put their own family story into Epic. And what we try to do is, if we're working particularly with our travel trade and our travel partners in the States, is as our genealogist is finding out the locations and the townland and the village and the cottage and the field in wherever it was in Ireland, we will share the information with them so that when they're planning that itinerary, they can make sure that they're going to these places. Because it's one of the most powerful things that you can do is bring someone to Ireland, get them to stand there, even though the cottages might not be there, you can get them to look at the same church and the same castle and the same hills that their ancestors 2 and 3 generations ago would have looked at. We maybe don't think of it like that, but for these millions of people that are coming from North America particularly, that's just gold dust for them. It's incredible.
That is incredible. And in terms of preparation, how do they contact you in advance about that?
Or a lot of people,
when they come, do they discover it when they're here? Or how? That sounds really a deep dive, if you like.
There's a whole range of options that we do for people. Sometimes they can literally just arrive at Epic and realise we do genealogy consultations, and they could sit down with our genealogist for 50 or 80 minutes. Now, they always need a starting point. They always need a date or a name or parents' names of the immigrant. A lot of people already have that. So they can just sit down with the genealogist just like that and do a consultation. And a lot of people then carry it on when they leave Ireland and go back to the States through Zoom calls, or they might do their own research because they have a little bit more know-how. The other end of the scale then is doing all that commissioned research. So we would have done it here for President Joe Biden, Tom Cruise, Bruce Springsteen, huge amount of people that it's that real in-depth story, and presenting their family history in a beautiful leather-bound book. And it's just a really powerful story because everyone's family history is unique. Other than a brother or sister, no one's got the same family history. So again, going back to, it's like gold dust in telling people's story.
David, it's really fascinating when you think about a small country like Ireland. And when I travel around the world, people ask me, St. Patrick's Day, they say to me, like, how come a little country like Ireland, if you go to a little island off Samoa, you know, to the Caribbean, everyone seems to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. It's a hard question to answer. But when I'm here today and I'm looking at what you were talking about, the millions of people, I suppose it's not really that difficult to understand.
It really isn't. And I suppose, Ed, you've given away the kind of the game towards the culmination of the museum and what we tell downstairs down in the museum. In the 19th gallery in the museum, it's called the Celebration Gallery, and it's where we show St. Patrick's festivals and parades and Irish festivals from around the world. And we always kind of say to people, this is the result of everything we've just come through in this museum. It is the culmination of a celebration of culture and heritage. It is Ireland's soft power really coming to the fore. Ireland as a country has never gone overseas and taken lands over, or I suppose persecuted people. So it's our soft power, it's our way of invading people through culture and heritage, bringing our dancing and our music and bringing our poets and our writers and bringing the people that have led change and fought for human rights and workers' rights all over the world. That's our legacy. And March 17th, everyone who is Irish celebrates that culture, be it a pint of Guinness or a whiskey or a dance or a jig, or sometimes it is putting on that leprechaun hat, or people of Irish ancestry connect to it and bake the brown bread or make their Irish coffees or whatever it is they do. And there's a hell of a lot of people out there that wish they were Irish on March the 17th. So for, as you say, for a small country on the west coast of Europe to have that footprint and that kind of legacy all around the world that is aware of Ireland through something, be it Bono or Conor McGregor or our writers and our poets, whatever it is, it's incredible. So Epic, I suppose, we try to tell the story of why. Why is Ireland known around the world, and why is Paddy's Day celebrated so well? One of my colleagues in the museum here, he always said that Epic celebrates Ireland's greatest export, which is people. It's not whiskey and Guinness, it is people, because it's people that brought that culture and heritage. So Paddy's Day is just that way of exploring it.
Yeah, funny, somebody said to me they love Ireland but the weather isn't great, and I said, well, the sunshine is in the people over here, you know. It's the,
true, that, but I always say to people, that's why we're so green, you can't have one without the other.
No, absolutely. The thinking behind the concept of it was quite clever, because one of the things I loved here even was, when I was a young boy going on a school tour, we went to Monaco. I remember Grace Kelly driving out in her car with Prince Rainier, and I remember being fascinated, and here I saw loads of stuff about Grace Kelly, and I was like, and that lovely sort of, you know, Monaco international, you know, it's, we don't just look across the pond, but you go everywhere.
We do, and I suppose, I know we've spoken a little bit more about the kind of genealogy side and the American visitors, but Irish people have really gone everywhere, and our museum isn't just a museum for American visitors. It's not just an Irish-American story. It is a major part of our immigration story, but it's not the only story. Irish people have gone everywhere. You know, you mentioned Grace Kelly there. Irish people have gone to Argentina, and they've gone to all over the continent of Africa, and as far as India and China, huge amount obviously gone on to Australia and New Zealand. But we celebrate the, I suppose, the unknown connections, those unknown people that have gone around the world. It's not just a museum and a list and a story of famous people. It's the people that went overseas that are lesser known, that we want to tell their stories and explore what brought them over to Argentina and Brazil, and what were they doing in the favelas of Rio de Janeiro, and what did they go on to change, and how did they make an impact on the world. So it definitely is more of that connection of the unknown. And we do get a lot of Americans coming to the museum, but a huge amount of Spanish and Italians and Germans that we love to celebrate Irishness, you know?
Oh yeah, I mean, I was here just the week before, and we're going to chat now a little bit about the amazing Shane McGowan, the Fairy Tale of New York exhibition that you've extended here. But the accents were all over, people from everywhere. It was almost like when I was doing the Game of Thrones tour up in the North, you know, people from all over the world were here, which is fascinating, because it is totally not just American.
Absolutely not. It is a museum of Irish people. That's how we see ourselves. We use immigration to tell the story, but the museum is essentially about us, about Irish people. You go to Guinness Storehouse and it's about how the beer is made, and you get to taste a pint of the black stuff. You go to any of our fantastic whiskey distilleries in Dublin and Ireland, it's about how whiskey is made. You get to taste it. You go to our fantastic cathedrals, you get to see a beautiful building and understand a little bit about religion. Whereas here, it's sometimes harder to place what it's about. It's just people. It's about people and telling their stories. And the permanent exhibition is the 20 galleries that we spoke about earlier on. It's looking at that overview of 1,500 years of history and 10 million Irish people that emigrated. And what we're very proud to do is typically about two exhibitions a year, temporary exhibitions. We have the support of the Department of Foreign Affairs to help us on some of those exhibitions, and then we collaborate with other people, such as the Hot Press that you've mentioned there with the Pogues exhibition. They gave the walls a talking, so that was one that we launched, we've been working on for a number of months last year.
Now, that was so timely, you know, it was so heartbreaking when Shane passed there before Christmas, but I was lucky to meet him at an event one night at a dinner party, and an amazing guy, and he was just larger than life, and I was really, he blew my mind away actually. But I must say, the exhibition here is really just so, it was poignant. Now again, it's great that you've extended it for people, but if anyone hasn't come in and seen it, the whole history of, you know, the punk, the setup, the London, the Kirsty MacColl, it is just brilliant. And it there's so much more to it than, you know, it's not just about Shane, but it's about all the things around him, and that amazing event where you got the police in New York to sing Galway Bay, which is in the song, but of course it never happened. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I suppose there's two sides to what we've done over the last couple of months. One is working with Hot Press and telling the story of Shane McGowan and the Pogues, and that Irish in Britain music scene, and the people of Irish ancestry have made an impact in British music. That's part of the exhibition that's been extended to the 18th of March. That's actually then travelling over to the Bob Dylan Centre in Oklahoma in the coming weeks as well. So we're very proud that is now has an international footprint, and we'll be able to bring that story of Shane McGowan and the Pogues to the Bob Dylan Centre. But it then links back to, it was a thing that we did, that we wanted to celebrate one of the lines in Fairy Tale of New York, which is, I suppose it's the chorus or one of the most famous lines, the boys of the NYPD choir sang Galway Bay. For listeners that either know or don't don't know, there never was officially an NYPD choir. So we decided that we would put one together to honour the line in the song, and we got them then to sing Galway Bay. We flew over to New York, some of our colleagues, and we filmed them and we recorded them and we put it out on Spotify. And it became this, I suppose, a welcome message from Epic before Christmas, that we want to celebrate the influence of Irish people around the world, but we very much just wanted them to kind of wish them a happy Christmas before. And that was linked to this campaign and the exhibition that we were running with Shane McGowan. And just before he passed away, we were delighted that he was able to know that we were doing this, and he was aware that we were doing this, put together this song in his honour and for the guys that wrote the song.
Yeah, no, brilliant. I mean, goosebump moments, and watching the video, it was phenomenal. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. And again, creating something like that from a song, it was just so smart, I thought. When it comes to putting, I suppose, exhibitions together and coming up with the concepts, I suppose there's so much to choose from, David, in terms of our of Irishness and the people that you have to choose from. Is it a hard job, I suppose, to pick whatever you're going to do next?
It's a very hard job, and I'm just glad it's not my job. We have a fantastic team, our museum team. So we have our museum curator, and we have a historian residence here that we partner with the Department of Foreign Affairs. So we're very lucky in terms of that we work with those partners to look at areas that are of interest, that we think would maybe need to be researched or looked at in a little bit more detail. So some of the exhibitions that we've worked on in the past would be things like Blazing a Trail, Women's History in particular, or Ireland's LGBTQ+ immigrant story and the Irish abroad. We've looked at teachers abroad. We've looked at the Irish at sea. One of our other current exhibitions that we've got on, it's a busy place at the moment, is called Entangled Islands, and that's the story of the Irish and the Caribbean and those intertwining connections between the two islands and their stories. And that's another exhibition that will be travelling around the world. So any of the previous exhibitions that we've done in collaboration with the Department of Foreign Affairs then travel overseas to the Irish embassies and consulates. So it's just spreading that message further afield for us, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I'm going to be in Boston for St. Patrick's Day. We're going to be broadcasting our Sunday show from Boston, which will be very interesting. And of course, the Irish connections there are amazing as well. In terms of the Jeannie Johnson here, right, and we'll talk a little bit about this after the break, there's a huge connection here with that as well, as part of Epic as well, isn't it?
There is, and we work really closely with the Jeannie Johnson and the team over there. In this particular part of the Docklands, you've got this triangle of emigration story. You've got Epic
perfect
here.
Perfect storm of Irishness.
Kind of. You have, obviously, Epic that we've chatted about. You have the famine statues, which are just located across on the Campshires on the river here. And then the Jeannie Johnson is moored here. We have very successfully offered combo tickets to both the Jeannie Johnson and the Epic. So to make it easy for people to be able to come and visit both, and to realise that the famine story that people get to experience on the Jeannie Johnson, it's a replica famine ship. They get to experience what life was like for people escaping the famine, what conditions on board were like, and what made the Jeannie Johnson a little bit of a different vessel and a different ship. It just links massively so with the story that we talk about in Epic. Irish famine is obviously a huge motivating factor into the story of emigration. And in Epic, it's not the only story, but in Jeannie, you really get to delve deeper into that guided experience and have people have a sense of, I think particularly we felt it in COVID in terms of cramped conditions and, you know, if disease spreads, if people are too close. And that was the coffin ship. The Jeannie Johnson was a little bit different. They had a doctor on board. They limited the amount of people. They insisted that they each had their rations and enough food on board, and they were able to get up on top to get some fresh air every day on the, 6 or 7 week journey that it would have taken, and nobody ever died on the Jeannie Johnson. So for a coffin ship, as they were known,
it's hard to believe.
Yeah, it really is. And even when it was it was a lumber ship before it was being used to transport passengers overseas, it was 16 trips it took over to North America to bring people from Ireland. And after the famine, when it wasn't being used as that, it became a lumber ship again. And even when it sank, nobody ever died. They were lucky to get off. It's an absolutely incredible story.
For anyone who hasn't been in, I would highly recommend that they do the combo, because it really is, again, something that I've done a few trips around the world, and it really is done incredibly well, and it like takes you back in time.
It does, for sure. It's a kind of an exploration of a dark history of Ireland, you know, and sometimes it's lovely to come in and touch and feel and put yourself in the shoes of people that emigrated during that time. So it's definitely worthwhile. Yeah.
So, David, were you always involved in hospitality and museums? I know you're a Limerick man, Munster man. Was it always something that you wanted to do?
I suppose it was by accident, Ed. I'm from County Limerick, a beautiful village called Adair, and I started working in the local hotel when
Very posh.
Not really, the other side of Adair. I started working in hotels there when I was 15, 16, and from there, hospitality and tourism just gets in the blood. You really get to meet people from all over the world. It's a great industry for getting the opportunity to travel and getting the opportunity just to meet different people every single day. So I eventually ended up in the world of hospitality and hotel management from there. But I've always said I wanted to go and explore the other side of tourism, not just necessarily the kind of the operational side. So eventually got into business development and sales in hotels with a fantastic group of hotels in Ireland. And what that did is, I suppose when you're selling Ireland as a tourism destination, you really get a sense of it being an island thing. You know, people come together and sell Ireland as a destination together. You have to get the people over to Ireland first, and then in there you get them to choose their hotels and wherever they get to stay or the things to do. And eventually ended up in Epic. I had always wanted to come to this museum that I had heard about, and maybe that's a lot of your listeners today, they've heard about this place called Epic and they've seen an advert. But 2 years after Epic opened, I said, right, I'm going to come down. I came down with my family and I visited the museum and I was blown away by it. I just said, this is absolutely incredible. What I had heard did not do it justice to the experience that I had when I visited.
And just to interject there, for anyone who hasn't, I mean, being involved in travel myself, I mean, you have so many awards. I mean, you won Best Attraction at the World Travel Awards. I mean, you're consistently winning. I mean, you beat the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
You beat, like, for people just to put it in perspective, couldn't believe that. I mean, amazing stuff.
See, 3 years actually after we opened, we won Europe's leading tourist attraction in the World Travel Awards, and we kept that for 3 years in a row. It must have been winner stayed on or something like that. It's for a small museum, like we're a small private museum in the heart of Dublin. It was a fantastic award for us and a testament to what we were trying to do and the story that we were telling, but also it was great for Dublin. I think Irish people and storytellers in Ireland, whether it be our museums or our attractions, it's absolutely incredible what we have on our doorstep here in Dublin, and to compete with the best in Europe was absolutely brilliant.
So when you came and visited Epic, you said, oh, that's for me, that's where I want to be.
I didn't at the time, but then I think it was 2 or 3 weeks later, I don't believe in fate, but two or three weeks later a job came up in sales and I said, I have to explore that. I want to find out what their vision is. So I spoke to the team here, and from there it was 6 years later.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I'm not sure if it's a Munster thing. I made a nice little program, a TV show about Limerick last year.
Saw it, yeah. It's fantastic.
And I mean, the international rugby experience there. I mean, the brewery scene that's going on. I mean, I was in One Perry Square. I mean, what they've done there with the Victorian Quarter, the bridges of Limerick. And then, of course, we went to Ballingarry and the mustard. But I was blown away by. But I think there's an amazing, when you go down and you stay outside of Dublin in different places like that, I mean, it's serious hospitality and the friendship is just amazing.
But that's Ireland in a nutshell, yeah. You know, I know it's
not just Limerick.
Not just Limerick, you know. I think you get that everywhere in Ireland. And I think particularly when you're in the tourism game, that's what we're selling. We're selling this product of Ireland, and people think of Cliffs of Moher and they think of landscapes. But people are blown away by people. Tourism is an industry where we are selling products and selling flights and selling hotels and things to do. But one of the main reasons why people come here is the people. And we always say to people, you know, go into that local pub. If you're visiting Mayo or Cork or Limerick, go into the local pub. And I challenge you, time you to see how long it takes before someone will strike up a conversation with you. Maybe it's a nosy thing of Irish people, I don't know. But it is all coming down to people. And yeah, I've been living away from Limerick now about 14 years now. So, you know, the kids are growing up in Dublin. That's hard to be buying them Dublin GA jerseys and things like that. And God only knows if I have to buy them Leinster.
Well, Limerick have been doing very well in the hurling for
Absolutely,
the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what's amazing as well? I've been at your space here. I mean, I know it's time to be saying, you have an amazing event business going on here as well. I've been at Australian Tourism Northern Ireland, like massive events when they're launching products, when there's new brand awareness things happening. I know we've new flights now starting with JetBlue to Boston and New York in March as well. I know that they're having a big event here, but it's amazing. It's a fantastic space as well for events, isn't it? It's perfect for that.
It really is, because I suppose the uniqueness of the building, it's very different on the skyline of Dublin. Most of our event space is actually on the ground floor here in the CHQ building, and I always say to people, it's got this beautiful glass front, and when people are hosting their event here, whether it be a product launch or it's an evening reception or just drinks, they've got Dublin as their backdrop, and it's incredible. There's life. You can see the River Liffey is flowing behind you. You can have the building up late. There's a lot of vibrancy and life in the area. And just the location in the Docklands. Dublin And where we are, it's really accessible to get to. We've a Lewis stop right at our door. We've Connolly Station right at the door. You've Bosaurus right at the door. So for people coming in, and people are always going to focus on sustainability and getting to a location, as an event space that can boast that, we're very lucky. And also having the convention centre just beside us as well is absolutely brilliant. So yeah, as an event space, it's really unique in terms of we have this cultural centre of Epic that will tell a story, and just this beautiful old building that has vibrancy and life to it is a unique backdrop for anyone's event.
It's actually, it's one of my favourite Christmas places. Can you know what I love? And you can come in here with your laptop and sit down and have a coffee, and it's all wireless everywhere, which is actually very cool. But they do a great, you do a fabulous Christmas here as well.
We do, yeah. I suppose we love Christmas. We go all out on the Christmas decorations.
Yeah, like the Rockefeller Centre.
It kind of is, actually. It's probably one of Dublin's biggest Christmas trees, yeah, that we have in the front of the building. So yeah, Christmas is fantastic. But even just going back to what you said there about spending time, like the location of where we are, you've got IFSC, but you're also in the middle of like the Silicon Docks, all of these multinational companies in the area. So our lunchtime trade here, for all of the cafes and the bars and restaurants, it's a really busy place, particularly during lunchtime, but it's really accessible for people. They can come in, you can get sushi, and someone else can go and get a curry or something. And it's an area we've looked at for future growth as well. It's something we want to explore to see how we can just expand on that welcoming atmosphere for people.
Another thing as well I love, just to before we finish off, the contemporary stuff here is really good, in case people think it's just all history. So I mean, the river dance is brilliant. I mean, you can actually learn to do river dance here if you want to, and yeah, boy bands. And so for younger people, there's a lot of stuff here as well that's fun and interactive. And of course, Irish music, we don't have to say how fantastic that is, but it bounces out at you downstairs.
It does, because it's just essentially getting into the celebration of who we are, and music and dancing, and that culture and heritage piece is a huge part of that. And yes, we look at historical stories, but it's very much about bringing it up to modern day. It's giving context to what people around the world know Irish people for as well. And we can look back and we can talk about Riverdance, and that's fantastic, because we show how Riverdance really kicked off the next generation of people, both being aware of Irish dancing and that culture, and how it's been travelling the world for 30 plus years. And we show the original footage here in the museum, we show how it's travelled the world, and then we ask people, are they ready to dance? And we bring out a dancer on the screen, and we have the footprints are on the ground in front of him, and he's slowly doing the basic 1, 2, 3, very slowly doing it, and he starts to speed up and you have to try and catch up with him. So that interactive side of trying to tell a story, but it's a fun way of getting people to realise of how something like Riverdance really invigorated people's awareness of the culture. And then in the music section, we share some of the stories of the lesser known people of Irish ancestry, such as Rihanna. We feature her in the museum, but we show some old album covers, old LPs of some of the Irish, other fantastic Irish exports, such as Thin Lizzy or maybe Van Morrison or Rory Gallagher, but the people of Irish ancestry as well, such as Ed Sheeran and Bruce Springsteen and Mariah Carey. So really there's a sense of nostalgia there with people. And what we always love to do is it challenges people, because they always say, what about this guy and what about this guy? And we love to hear that. We love to hear that debate, or you haven't mentioned this guy, and we always welcome that. We really want people to get their creative juices flowing, and who else are we missing? Who else do we need to include? We constantly get Bono. Where's Bono in the museum? And we always say the same story. He lives in Dalkey. He's not an immigrant, so we can't include him.
But again, it's funny, because that is, of course, what is important about, you know, it is totally that, immigration. So, yeah. Which is brilliant. Yeah. No, I'm sure Bono's in the Little Museum of Ireland.
He's represented somewhere in Dublin. He's fine.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing I love is the passport. I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but that's a really cool one. I've done a bit of the Camino Way. It's quite cute. You come in here, for anyone who doesn't know, and you get this little passport and you get all the stamps. So you put in your time here at Epic.
Yeah, you have to sort of 20 different galleries, you have to stamp your way through the museum. And for a museum that is I suppose fully digital, it's a real tangible way of interacting with the museum. People love to stamp it down. It's a real feeling of satisfaction to see that red stamp on the first few galleries and then to fill it. And when I travel around the world, for the people that they have come to Epic, one of the first things they say to me, oh, it's the passport. I remember the passport. I love that passport and I still have it. Like the Camino, yeah. I'm the same with you, having done some of the Camino. I have the passports back at home and I want to continue to then fill it. So it's something that happened actually by happy accident. Being a digital museum designed to be self-guided, people are going to go around at their own pace. We said we had to give them a map of the museum to let them know how far they are into the museum and where the toilets are and just the basic things like that. And we said, let's put it on a passport, because you're going on that journey. And what do you do to passport? You stamp your passport. So it became a happy accident and one of the most memorable things for the museum.
Yeah, no, it's a great part of it. We were talking there about people around the world. Are there different parts of the world now that are growing traveling again. I mean, we seem to be back to a good flourishing tourism. Of course, we know America is huge for us. Emerging markets, David?
Emerging markets, I think it's going to be slower to come back, to be honest. I think we're still in a recovery mode as a tourism industry. We're still just having to get that low-hanging fruit, you know, welcoming the British market back in a big way, welcoming that American, North American market back, and obviously the continental Europe. What we were hoping for before COVID struck was the emergence of the Asian market and the longer haul markets. They were starting to come back and it was very exciting. They haven't come back as of yet. So I think it's one for the future for sure. But like, we've done fantastically well. 2023, I think for the industry, was still a recovery year. For us at Epic, it was our busiest year ever. So I suppose it's a testament to what we're trying to do and the story that we're telling. And we're really excited for the year ahead. And things are looking positive for tourism and for us for the year ahead.
Can you reveal any exciting upcoming exhibitions yet? Or are you at the planning stage?
There's always something, which is again really exciting. Our museum team are never far away from curating an exhibition. So the two exhibitions that we mentioned earlier on are going to be traveling the world. You've got They Gave the Walls a Talking, the Pogues exhibition, that's going to be going over to the US, and then the Entangled Islands is going to be traveling overseas as well. And to replace them, obviously we'll need to have something that's of interest to people. And it's not an Epic curated, but we're going to be hosting the Irish in Britain exhibition from April onwards. So that's a fantastic one that's been taking place in London, and it's very contemporary. It's what you mentioned earlier on. It's that Irish in Britain contemporary stories of our comedians and our musicians.
Graham Norton comes to mind.
He's featured in the museum, a good Cork man like yourself. Yeah. He's featured here in Epic, but he will be part of that overall story of the Irish in Britain. And then later in the year, we'll be looking at the Irish and India. So again, those lesser thought of places where there's Irish connections. So we'll be exploring that.
Brilliant. Well, David, it's been epic to talk to you this evening. I couldn't resist that pun. Thank you so much. And it's brilliant to hear of the success of the museum and continued growth and continued success.
Cheers, Ed.
This Sunday show with Epic, the Irish Emigration Museum, an interactive journey that shows how a small island made a big impact on the world. EpicCHQ.com.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.